Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Hi, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Iditapod. I'm Tegan Hanlon, a reporter at Alaska Public Media. That's right, this isn't Casey Grove. Consider me a fill-in, at least for this episode. Coming up, we have an extended interview with one of the mushers out on the trail, 28-year-old Sean Underwood. I sat down with Sean last Friday, the day before the Iditarod ceremonial start. It was also just 3 days after Sean learned he'd be racing in the Iditarod at all. Yeah, 3 days. Four-time Iditarod champion Jeff King had to drop out of the race at the very last minute. He tapped Sean, one of his dog handlers, to fill in. And just to be clear, it wasn't just filling in for a 1,000-mile sled dog race, but also some of the events leading up to it. I talked with Sean before one of those events. It was a meet and greet in an Anchorage hotel that he was headlining with three-time Iditarod champion Mitch Seavey. We talked about how Sean got into sled dog racing and that exact moment when he found out that he'd be launched into this year's Iditarod. That moment is where this interview begins. Here's Sean.
I was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, and I went to college in at Georgia Southern University. And I graduated college and did some traveling in Central and South America and learned about a different kind of lifestyle, especially visiting my family down in Chile. They taught me about, you know, living outdoors and the farm life, and I just really got excited about maybe I don't have to put on a suit and tie every day and go on this linear career. I got an economics degree and I'm not really using it right now, but so after 8 months traveling, I went back home to Atlanta and kind of tried to settle into my econ career, and it didn't really go very well. Might have not put that much effort in though. And I called my aunt and uncle that live in Anchorage, and I never really knew them that well growing up because we were so far away from each other. But I called them and asked if they, you know, what they do, why are they up there? And they told me they're commercial fishermen and they've been fishing for 4 years. So I tossed the idea out there of maybe me helping them with their commercial fishing business. And so I flew up there here in 2015 and spent my first summer in Alaska on Kodiak Island, like living off the grid in a cabin, drinking water out of a creek and catching your own food and, you know, reading books and not, instead of watching movies. And it was just a totally different lifestyle that I had never been introduced to, because I grew up in the suburbs playing tennis, and this really opened up my mind to this Alaskan lifestyle. It's pretty awesome. I spent another summer up there the following year, and at the end of that year, I started daydreaming about maybe a winter up in Alaska, and they were talking to me about, you know, how cold it gets, and there's lots of snow, and we brought up sled dogs, of course. You can't bring up winter without sled dogs in Alaska. And they told me that they're really good friends with Jeff King. When they told me he was a four-time Iditarod champion, I kind of like smiled and nodded and then waited for them to go to bed just so I could pull out my phone and Google what an Iditarod was. Okay, then I figured it out and I gave Jeff a call, and he got me a job. And I started with just scooping the poop and keeping the dogs happy and feeding them, and next thing you know, I'm harnessing the dogs and taking them out on runs, and I've been working for him for 4 years. My first winter, I got to run the Tustamina 200, which is an Iditarod qualifier. Learned a lot during that race. And the next year, I ran the Copper Basin 300, known as the toughest 300 miles in Alaska, and that really put some hairs on my chin. And this year, I ran the Yukon Quest 300. And man, that was a really challenging race. And I kind of had been working towards running the Iditarod eventually, but I didn't really know when because it was Jeff's dogs. So I figured 2021 was kind of the trajectory I was going on. And I was excited because Jeff was time for him to take the baton and after I got done with the quest. So he left for Anchorage to do all of these pre-Iditarod events, and he ended up having a really serious health scare and having an emergency surgery. He's on the mend and he's getting better every day. But he called me after the surgery and told me, Sean, time to put your big boy pants on. And that I was going to be taking his place in the Iditarod, that he talked to the race marshal, Mark Nordman, and he said it should be good, but I got to double check with the board. And I spent the whole day in this weird limbo of, wait, Jeff just got out of surgery. He's probably kind of loopy. Is this real? Are you sure? It was probably not even allowed. I'm a rookie. I'm pretty sure that was like unprecedented that a rookie would just hop in the same week of the race. And so I started thinking maybe it's just not going to happen and I'll just go about my day. Well, I got a call from Mark Nordman later that night at 7 o'clock, and this is on Tuesday, and he said, I'm not going to beat around the bush. You've been approved to run the Iditarod. It was unanimously agreed by the board. And the whole reason that they said yes was because I had worked with the dogs and then I knew the dogs, and I wasn't just a rookie finding another musher and hopping on the runners to learn the dogs' names that week. I've been with these guys, some of them their whole life, most of them their whole life. That's a pretty young team. And I said yes. I knew it was going to be hectic, but I also knew that this was an amazing dog team. They're all in their prime. They're all physically in peak condition, mentally too. And that it was well within my skill set to pull this thing off with this group of dogs especially. So here I am. It's been a whirlwind of a week getting my gear together and my act together. And I'm very excited to get out on the trail. But this whole week has been nuts. And I'm just excited to get out there.
Just to like rewind a little bit, can you talk about, so you go from a point where you're waiting for your aunt and uncle to go to bed to Google the Iditarod, what like hooked you with sled dogs? What kept you mushing, taking care of the dogs?
The lifestyle. I mean, I woke up every day and went out to the, just outside of Denali National Park, and I got to just be out there all day and stare at these incredible mountains and learn about the wildlife and connect with the dogs. I mean, I left the dog at home with my mom, and when I came up to Alaska, and I was really bummed about it. And then I came up to meet all these 40 dogs that Jeff has, and I quickly forgot about Tess. And because these dogs' personalities are amazing and they're so fun to hang out with, and they love what they do, and it's contagious. And just getting up every morning and getting out there with the dogs is just, wow, this is something I can just do every day. And then in the summer, I get to talk to people that don't really understand about sled dogs. Hey, what it's all about, what is an Alaskan Husky? And I get to kind of educate everyone else in the world that hasn't really been exposed to this sport about this awesome lifestyle that I get to live. So it's just a really fun change of pace from winter training the dogs to summer training people in a way to understand what it's all about.
Fast forward to this week. Can we dissect your week a little bit more? Do you remember where you were when you got the call from Jeff King telling you to put on your big boy pants and what you were doing? And like, I'm curious what your gut reaction was in that moment.
There's a video somewhere of my reaction, but I went to our office building that we have on the property. My coworker Marin had called me or texted me that morning and said, hey, we have a meeting in the office. And my gut reaction is, you know, sometimes I kind of cut some corners with the paperwork that we have or something. And I thought she was calling me in because I messed something up again, but didn't write down the dog weights. And I was like, oh gosh. And then she's like, oh, it's a meeting with me, you, and Jeff. And I was like, okay, all right. I wonder how he's doing in Anchorage, probably fine. And he called me and said he'd had the surgery, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's not running the Iditarod. And then I was like, oh, I know where this is going, because we had talked about me running the Iditarod next year, and he said, yeah, so we're going to have you run the Iditarod this week. And I just kind of sat there like with my mouth wide open, wondering, you know, what do I even do next? What's the next move? Because I knew there was just so many things I needed to do. So I was just kind of, as much as I'm stumbling over my words right now, that's exactly how I was when I got that call. My thoughts were just all over the place, and I didn't believe it. I literally didn't believe it, and I kept on hanging on to the fact that I'm a rookie. I didn't go to the rookie meeting. You know, that's a mandatory rule. And I thought that was going to be enough of a reason. I mean, the Iditarod doesn't really owe me anything. They don't need to do any favors for me. But they knew that I knew these dogs, and they made that decision. But I spent all day thinking, am I running the Iditarod or not? Jeff told me yes, but he's just out of surgery. Now, I haven't heard from the race itself. I haven't heard from Mark Nordman. I haven't heard from anybody. And I spent all day just thinking, I'll just wait until I hear from Mark. And I kind of, by the end of the day, I didn't hear until 7 o'clock. So I was thinking, well, they're not getting back to me. Are they sitting in a room deliberating for 10 hours? I don't know. So I got the call, and it was pedal to the metal after that. But, man, I couldn't even tell you. I just was dumbfounded and speechless. And, like, I've just paced back and forth in my apartment for several hours that day.
What did you do next? What were the biggest decisions or moves you had to make after realizing you were running the Iditarod in, what, 4 days?
Well, I had to be in Anchorage. I got the call Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. Had to be in Anchorage to be at the Mushroom meeting at 9 a.m. on Thursday. So I had the day of Wednesday basically to travel down to Anchorage. So I needed to get my parka and my mitts and my bibs and all my gear together. And I knew that we have an awesome crew, and they could take care of traveling with the dogs later that week, bringing the harnesses and booties and food that we need for this weekend. So I just concentrated on getting all my things together. You know, that night I didn't even bother doing any gear gathering. I just needed to take a deep breath and get a good night's sleep and wake up ready to rock, because I wanted to have some kind of direction as to what I was doing, because I had so much going on in my head that I just was like, I needed to just get a good night's rest here. And I just got all my gear together. I have an awesome support group. My girlfriend helped me out a bunch, and we have 3 other folks that are working with the dogs. So I just was able to forget about everything except for what kind of gear I needed to bring. The sled was already in Anchorage, and I just started calling all the people I wanted to hear advice from and talking to them. Yeah.
Can I ask who you called? Was it other mushers? Was it family?
Yeah, it was my mom was the first person I called. I called her at 7:15, and I told her, she's in Atlanta, so this is 11:15 p.m. Atlanta time. So she's in bed, and hey, Sean, how's it going? Mom, I'm running the Iditarod in 3 days. She's like, what? Said, yeah, I'm running the Iditarod in 3 days. I'm not kidding. He's like, no, this is a joke. You're not running the Iditarod. Pass the phone over to Kaylin. It's my girlfriend. And Kaylin confirms it. And I didn't hear from her for a while after that. And I called my aunt and uncle next after that. They had found out down here in Anchorage. And when I was talking to them, they were like, they kind of accidentally spilled the beans. They said, yeah, so your mom is, she's flying in tomorrow on Thursday at 2:30, and we're kind of wondering what, you know, where she needs to go. And then he, mid-sentence, was just like, oh, no, oh, I spoiled the surprise. And so my mom found out at 11:15 at night, booked a flight to Anchorage, is here right now, and is leaving Sunday, going back to Atlanta, and then booked a flight already to go to Nome. You know, she just was like, screw it, I don't care how much it costs, my son's running the Iditarod. So that was kind of the first call I made. And then I called, Jeff was incapacitated. I couldn't really talk to him too much because he needed to get rest. So one of my buddies that I've worked with over the years, Alex Buto, an Iditarod veteran, I gave him a call and was just like, just talk to me, tell me something. I don't even know what to ask you. And he has been helping me out this week, just kind of coaching me around. And now that Jeff's kind of a little bit more alert and has rounded the corner health-wise, I've stopped into his room and talked a little bit about what kind of mindset to have this for the next couple weeks. And what he had planned with his gear and how I can implement it. So, yeah, and then I've just gotten support from all corners of the state and down south in Georgia.
And can you talk about a little bit of you know, what else you've had to do this week? Because it seems like it's not just preparing, but suddenly you're the star of this team. And that comes with, I imagine, meet and greets and events like today. What have you been kind of thrust into?
Yeah, you know, as growing up as a kid, I always was like the class clown and looking for attention. So I guess I'm kind of living out my like childhood desires of people asking me questions and excited to meet me. But it is a lot, and it's a little overwhelming. Doesn't mean I'm not excited about it, but you know, going to the meet and greet and having a line of 20 people for 90 minutes wanting an autograph from me and asking me about, you know, how I'm feeling, it was pretty surreal. And you know, I've heard from my college town today and they wanted an interview, and it's like the fifth interview I've given in 2 days. I've given one or two interviews my whole life. So yeah, it's fun. I like smiling and talking with people, and it's exciting. But then at the same time, I got to think about how I can be ready at the start line, and that kind of comes and goes in ways where I'm like, okay, well, I'm just gonna spend some time meeting with some fans and forget about all my worries for an hour or two, and then I go back home and I'm like, okay, time to figure out what I gotta do. And it's just little things. I have everything I need. It's that last 10 or 15% of gear and little knickknacks that would make the trip quicker, make my work a little bit more efficient. And that's what I'm just kind of working on these last couple of days.
Sounds like you've spent a lot of time with these dogs already. Can you talk about how well you know the team that you're headed off to Nome with?
Yeah, I know them super well. I mean, Jeff has, at the later stages of his career, has enjoyed finding competent mushers and to work with him to train his dogs so that he doesn't have to carry as heavy of a workload during the peak training as he probably did, you know, as recently as 5-10 years ago. And so, you know, myself and a couple of other folks have kind of been listening. Hey, what, Jeff, what do you need from us? How can we, what kind of trip do you want us to go on with these dogs? And he said, hey, go out to the Denali Highway, do a, you know, 120 mile trip, and, you know, watch for this, take this certain sled, make sure you run that dog on the right. And then you go out there and it's just me and the dogs and Cody or Martin, whoever it was, we'd be out there and it'd just be us and the dogs. It's not like we can, you know, be on the phone with Jeff asking him for advice. So, I mean, I've been watching these dogs run for three winters. I've been working here for three summers, and I know every little personality trait that they have and their injury history, if they have one at all. And they think of me as at least one of their dads, and they look at me anytime I'm around like, oh, there's Sean, what's he up to there? You gonna come and give me a little hug, maybe some love and attention? So we're really close, and I've loved them so much, and I'm really excited for them to get here in a couple hours so I can show them that love. I miss them, and they help soothe my waves of anxiety. So it's nice, I love them, and I really, really have grown close with these dogs over those few years.
Thinking about the 2020 Iditarod and the trail, is there any piece of it that you're most excited about at this point?
You know, all I've heard is how much snow is out there from the start to the finish, just oodles of snow. Some sections are more snow than people that have lived there for 30 years have ever seen in their life. You know, that's what I'm a little bit nervous and excited about, is we're going to have these, you know, be in a trench with 4-foot wall of snow on either side of the sled for the first few hundred miles of the race. And so I'm kind of excited to see how the dogs do in those conditions, how the sled moves in those conditions. And of course, you got your notorious sections of trail that I, you know, hear allusions to in every interview, the Dalzell Gorge and the Happy River Steps. And those are going to be fun. And I just went down Eagle Summit like a month ago on the Quest 300 trail and thought my life was going to end it down that mountain. So I got a feel for the technical aspect of driving these sleds and what it's like going down a steep hill. But doesn't mean I'm not going to be kind of approaching those sections of trail with care. And then just kind of looking forward, not to a specific part of the trail, but just to kind of settling into my routine with the dogs and kind of answering a lot of these pre-race questions that I have in my head so that I can really just be in sync with this whole trip. And I feel like I can just get to that point in that first 300 miles, and then from then on, things will just get into a rhythm. That's what I'm looking forward to. That's what my goal is, just to get into that rhythm and then keep it up.
Does it feel real yet? Does it feel real like you're just going to set out on the trail on Sunday officially?
Sometimes yes, and when it does, it's like a slap to the face, and a lot of the time it doesn't. But the thing is, I gotta make it real in my head somehow, because that's the only way for me to, you know, get prepared for it. Because yeah, the good thing is I've always been a procrastinator, so this helps with that. I also, had I signed up for the Iditarod like everybody else, I'd spend the next 8 months worrying about it. Well, now I find out 4 days before the start, and so I only got 4 days to worry about it. So, you know, it was Monday night. I was at 229 Parks Tavern and Restaurant having a beer with Cody Strath and talking about the Quest. And then I woke up the next morning and I'm running the Iditarod. So I kind of, sometimes I'm like, man, those were simpler times. But I'm really excited about, I like the pressure. I like the stress. That's why I do this, because it's fun to have these high stakes and to be a little bit worried. It makes me feel like I'm really alive, you know?
Fair. Does it feel at all, we were talking about this in the office, does it feel like you've been handed like the keys to a Lamborghini?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this team, everyone on the trail knows that this team is a bunch of rock stars. I mean, that's no secret. And a lot of mushers have come up to me and said, man, you lucky son of a gun. And because I have such an amazing dog team, I mean, I got a Lamborghini. And it's awesome. And I am never driven a Lamborghini 1,000 miles, but I think that these dogs and I have a deep enough connection. You know, Paige Drobny told me the other day, none of us have ran these dogs 1,000 miles yet this season. So don't worry, you know, we're all doing the same thing. And that kind of made me feel a little bit better. Hey, these guys haven't ran 1,000 miles in one trip this year yet, and that's, we're all kind of managing them into that mode. So really, I got a Lamborghini to work with, and I'm really excited about it, but I'm not going to be driving down the Autobahn at 200 miles an hour, I'll tell you that much.
And just another question, what's your goal for this year's race?
My goal is not to get lost in the where I'm at in the race, especially early, and to finish. And I think that if I don't concentrate on, oh no, I'm already in 35th place, no, it's for 400 miles in, if I'm thinking like that, then I'm gonna finish in the back of the pack. But if I am just focused in on the dogs and don't listen to all the noise when I'm out there, listen to those experienced mushers, watch them, see what they're doing, talk to them. That it's not like we're, you know, not gonna, we're, this is a tight-knit community. One of my favorite things about mushing are the people. They are so nice to me, and they are always very helpful. So I'm gonna hope to be traveling with some good friends out there. If I don't already know them, we're gonna be friends at some point. And my goal is to finish with a team that looks like they're ready to run another 1,000 miles, and wherever that puts us in the list at the end, so be it.
And that wraps up our interview with 2020 Iditarod musher Sean Underwood. I'm Tegan Hanlon. Stay tuned for our next episode of the Iditapod.